Hey everyone, it is Tuesday, March 5th, and we are trying something new, a live radio show, maybe you might want to call it, but a live show called Mass Construction Show Rundown that we are doing live on Instagram for the moment, hopefully soon to be on YouTube and a bunch of other channels. But this was a test run. It's with myself, Mike Yanovich, and Regina Oliveri. So have a listen and let me know what you think. Let us know what you think. Is it something you would be interested in tuning into on your drive in the morning? Go head over to mass.construction, so at mass.construction, to watch the live version if you want to see the video. But it is a more relaxed, kind of unscripted rundown method. So have a listen and let me know what you think.
Fantastic. That's good.
Yeah. And then last night I was having like anxiety dreams. If anybody knows me from the Netherlands, if anyone knows me, I sleep like a champ. But like last night I was having dreams that like there was a comedian that was on here with us and that the comedian was going to be like an extra person. He was going to like crack jokes. So there was this Asian comedian that was here with us, like trying to interject, and it was a mess.
Too much ambient joke. Get off the ambient. I think that's the problem.
Yeah. You were watching life before you went to sleep. That's the problem.
Yeah. Yeah. That's my normal night.
Yes. And then also in my anxiety dream, apparently, was that Regina was talking about plumbing in a basement on this. So she's describing all the plumbing. She's like, as we discussed last week, this is the backflow preventer and all this other stuff. And I'm getting nervous. I'm like, if someone asks me, I don't know what any of this is. And needless to say, I was more anxious about this than I thought. So.
I didn't really sleep well last night either. I was up probably for the same reasons. And for anybody on the call that knows me, I am not an early bird like this. So. You're pushing me out of my comfort zone right now, and it's a good thing.
Absolutely. I'll stop after my dreams, but the other thing in the dream, we were in your office, Regina, and we're trying to stop and get someone to talk to us, but they're like giving us dirty looks, like, we got work to do. What are you doing? You know what I mean? So it was great.
Everything you just said could have been something that's happened in the past week, like the past 7 days. So I'm not sure that was a dream, but roll with it.
Yeah. Now, hopefully we'll get a decent turnout. If not, we'll get the audio onto the main RSS feed where the Mass Construction Show normally is. LinkedIn, which is the primary platform, was not sharing. I couldn't get 1,000 views on anything that I posted about this. I think because I was trying to get people to go to Instagram.
Right.
Nobody was seeing it. But all right, let's get to it. This is Mass Construction Rundown. First up, Mike, if you can just give us a little update. Fossil fuel free has happened, or first one went into effect in Massachusetts. Who was it? What's happening?
Yeah, this is something that's going to, as I keep saying, you know, this is something where people are thinking, oh, down the line, we're going to come across this, but not now. It's live. So fossil fuel free is, you know, no gas, no home heating fuel, no propane, no coal for that matter. And right now we have the first community that went fossil fuel free, and that's all new structures, commercial and residential, one and two family, multifamily, podiums. And it's, you know, also going to pertain to major renovations, and you get there pretty quick with the major renovations. First municipality was Brookline. They went live February 20th. So as of right now, any new structure in Brookline, residential or commercial, or major renovation for that matter, which equates to just about 50% of the structure, you're going to be cutting the gas lines. You're going to be removing propane and home heating fuel. You're going to be cutting the ties to that as well. And it's going to be only the electric pathway, the all electric pathway in the code. The interesting thing is when we talk about electric and electrification, it's not just electrification. What people are missing out on is they're going to limit the electrical usage as well. You can't just go out and cut the ties to your fossil fuels and then use as much electricity as you can. There's actually a limitation on equipment and electrical usage. So people need to think about that as well when they start to think about electrification and going there. So
that'll be interesting. And then do you recall the other towns off the top of your head?
Yeah, so there's 7 communities that have been approved through the application process, and I'll try to hit them. It's going to be Acton, Concord, Lexington. It's going to be Lincoln. It's going to be Cambridge, who will be next, next as far as March 20th, 23rd, somewhere around there, they'll be fossil fuel free. And then there is Aquinnah on the vineyard is actually going fossil fuel free. And then 2 communities that are on the outskirts, and I'm not sure what happened, Newton and Arlington actually had a hiccup where one of the requirements for fossil fuel free in order to get in the program is that your community met the 10% affordable housing requirement. And they apparently haven't proven that yet to the state. So until they can do that, they won't be allowed in the program. And if they do not have the 10%, it'll be Northampton, I believe. Northampton and Somerville will be in the fossil fuel free program if they don't come through, Arlington and Newton.
Nice. Now, Big Wheel said good old snobby towns. I mean, we can say right off the bat, we knew what the first 10 would be in there. You know, I don't want to make this all about code talk because people are already trying to wake up in the morning, but I think it was important. It's fossil fuel free going into effect. The only provisions that get you out of it is healthcare, correct, Mike?
Yeah, if it's your a licensed hospital. There's a few other things right now, interestingly enough. Residential structures over 12,000 square feet, which is kind of counterintuitive. Mm. Residential structures over 12,000 square feet in licensed healthcare facilities. And as you know, Joe, we've already come across it in one review we've done. You know, if it's a support building for a hospital or an administrative building, they are not exempt from the fossil fuel free requirements. So, it should be interesting to see what comes down. And, you know, I'll throw this out there. And one of the things that I'm finding is some of the conflict. You know, the same groups that are pushing the fossil fuel free are also pushing the protection of historic structures and preservation. Well, fossil fuel free and energy code upgrades don't necessarily blend well with historic structures and historic preservation, right? So a lot of these communities that require historic preservation and historic districts have requirements that you stick with your single pane divided light glass windows. Well, if I upgrade the insulation in a structure and I have single pane divided light windows, it's really all for naught at that point because you just have portholes for cold air out or cold air in, hot air out, hot air in. So there's a bit of a struggle already with these communities figuring out how they're going to respond here. So
Big Wheels 1583 is our people. How are they going to be managing the fossil fuels that drive the electricity that's being sent to the house?
Yeah.
Well, you're trying to use common sense. That's not allowed in the energy code. So throw that out the window. What you need to know is if you're trying to work in Brookline, and unless you're a healthcare or home over 12,000 square feet, you can't use electricity. Those other towns Mike mentioned, you can't use electricity. It's for real. It started now.
Yeah. And let me just to kind of put a cap on that is you don't need to be in the fossil fuel code to push you to fossil fuel free, believe it or not. These communities that are specialized code is also that code is going to push you. So that's the predecessor. That's the above stretch code. That's going to push you to its electrification really quick if you're in the specialized code communities. And as of my last check, there's 31 communities that are in the specialized code, and there's a dozen more that are gearing up to go into it as well.
Nice. Okay. We have a new commissioner at ISD, Tanya Del Rio. I don't think any of us have met her. Mike, Regina, have you met
Tanya?
I have not.
City of Boston, I mean, just for everyone on the call, City of Boston commissioner.
Yes, City of Boston ISD commissioner.
Yes.
And I think that's important. I think everybody on this phone, on this call, on this show, will be biased when it comes to this. Bias, whatever the right word is. We're all friends with Sean, the prior commissioner. He's fantastic. Sean should have stayed, in my opinion. But with that said, there was a lot of there was some criticism coming, saying, "Okay, well, this person doesn't have any construction experience or ISD experience," and you know, I think that's an unfair criticism. You know, there have been technical people in that seat in the past. Sean, for one. Dion, he was commissioner of housing, so he had experience in housing. Buddy Christopher was a registered architect. So there were people there that had that ISD experience before and construction experience. But as far as I know, that is really much more of a political or bureaucratic, and I don't mean that in a bad way, but it's a bureaucrat that sits in that seat and is the connection to City Hall.
Right.
So I think it's unfair criticism to say that she doesn't have construction experience. What do you guys think?
Yeah, go ahead, Jenny, and then I'll just add.
No, go ahead.
So what people have to understand is there's really two seats that are deemed, you know, commissioner. So there's the appointed commissioner, which is where Sean sat, right? So that's the I would say, the administrative head of all of ISD. And then there's the inspector of buildings, which is in most other towns called the building commissioner. So there's where, so there's really two seats, you know, that are in that department. So that's one thing that people have to understand. Go ahead, Reggie.
Well, the other part of that is that it's not just the building department. So, you know, there are other departments that fall under that commissioner seat now as well. So I just feel, I mean, we all know, love Sean, but I feel like, you know, now that Tanya's in that role, a new set of eyes, she might be able to see things from a different perspective. And, you know, everyone's always looking for change up at ISD. So I don't think that it could be a bad thing.
No. And I'll tell you, I was, when I heard that I was going to be a non-construction person, I was a bit taken aback, because here's the elephant in the room. The process is broken to get a permit up there. It is. And it's been for years. And we all, you know, Joe, you and I work there, and Regina, you've been working, going through that department for years. You know, there have been a lot of commissioners and a lot of people that have promised the world, you know, and you have a supporting staff up there. There's a bunch of people that do their job every day and try to give the best customer service and best response to people coming in there. You know, but the process itself is broken. There's a lot of cogs in the wheel, and if there's only a few cogs spinning, it's not going to work. So going on what you just said, Joe, and what you just said, Regina, I think it may be a good thing if you have an administrative position filled there, an administrative person there. Maybe this is the time that they fix the process and expedite the permitting. It's needed. It is absolutely needed at ISD. And hopefully this is the person that that will do it. They'll start taking a closer look.
Yeah, and if I may, so it's, you know, there's a lot of good people up there, but it's a broken system. You need someone to adjust the system, because I'll tell you this much, the people that are doing their job want the system fixed more than us who go get permits.
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, it's, if I'm being honest, I think it's a long shot, because I feel like every time a mayor rolls through, you know, there's a team of people that parachute down and say, "Oh, hey, we're going to fix permitting," and then it never happens.
Right.
But, you know, I think maybe a complete outsider has a shot. So I'm keeping my fingers crossed that Tanya Del Rio can be that person.
Well, one thing I want to add, though, is I feel like every time, you know, at least in my experience, when I see a new commissioner come through, they're always just so hyper-focused on ISD. You know, we got to fix ISD, fix ISD. And I think what people forget sometimes is that in order to get a permit, it's not just ISD. And I think if, you know, somebody coming from City Hall or from the outside maybe can help connect the rest of the dots to, you know, incorporate other departments such as, you know, water and sewer, BPDA, you know, look at it as a whole and not just, we got ISD, you know, so hopefully there could be some of that.
Yeah, that's a great point, because, you know, curb cuts, Boston Fire Department, all of those together really need to, you know, need to work. And I think you brought up a good point yesterday when we were chatting, Regina, about, you know, the portal systems as well, when you're looking at multiple communities.
Right. You know, I mean, ISD can't issue a permit and for certain, you know, scopes of work without the other departments too. So, you know, that's just going back to what I originally said. But to talk about the portal, if you want to switch to that a little bit, I have an issue with the portal that Boston uses. I just don't think that it's super transparent, especially to folks that don't use it all the time. And I think that not every department is in Hanson, which is the system that Boston uses. And it really makes it, some still use paper, right? And some, you know, not every department speaks to the portal. And it, that makes it really confusing too, to navigate, you know, whether you've done it a million times or you've never done it before at all. Especially think about the folks that don't really do it. You know, you feel like, oh, I uploaded everything. And it's the same thing in other communities, that certain communities have better portal systems than others. You know, I went through an issue in a different town where I thought they all had access, and you know, quite frankly, they didn't. And I think the portals can definitely, if they're good portals, they can really work well. And if they're not, it's a bottleneck.
Yeah, and to clarify for people listening, when you're saying that everyone can access it, you're talking about a portal in a community where if you upload a document, you're assuming that Public Works, Fire Department, Historic, you've given it to the town, it's in the town portal, everybody should be able to open that up that works at the town. But a lot of people might be surprised or not surprised to hear that not every agency in a city or town can view a document when you upload, and that creates problems. Now you're I feel safe to say, I can use the word almost, you're an expert at this, right? You do this for a living. And if you're confused, how do we expect the homeowner or the first time person going down applying for a permit mm-hmm. to understand how that portal works? I think you've said in the past, Regina, you like Viewpoint.
I do, yeah, yes. And the thing about Viewpoint, which, you know, Cambridge, Newton, those are a few communities I can think of off the top of my head.
Viewpoint is one of the largest companies right now. They just were acquired by another national company. Huge, huge deal. It actually just made national news, but go ahead, Reggie.
I talk about Viewpoint like I have stock in it. I push it. I love it. But the application, you know, you can do a City of Boston application relatively quickly, like just answer the questions that they're asking. Viewpoint, it takes a while. You need to really know questions about the building, and that then will trigger you and send you to different departments, right? So it might take you, I don't know, call it an hour to do an application, but they're asking you so many questions that it then filters it off to the right people, the right departments, where I think a lot of cities and towns, not just Boston, I mean, I just went through it in Brookline, interdepartment was missed. I think the applications, if they ask more questions, and obviously you have to answer them correctly instead of just saying no.
Fudging it, 000.
But, you know, I think that could help some of these cities and towns.
Really
streamline the process.
Here's a funny item. Dion just got on. So Dion, we needed you. We needed you for the past 10 minutes where we discussed Tanya, the new commissioner, and our thoughts around it, and where we thought that improvements can be made on. It looks like Tanya just joined as well. If either you guys are interested, let me know. We can have you jump in on this if you want to talk a little bit about what the plans are for ISD.
I'm jumping on you again, Joe. Doing what we usually do.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So the you know, Viewpoint is fantastic. It's now called OpenGov. So Viewpoint went to OpenGov, and now OpenGov in turn has been purchased. Again, it was a national news that it was purchased by a company called Cox. But the thing about any permitting system, when you're in there, as far as the customer service goes, the people who are administrating it, the inspectors, the admin staff, they should be, you know, as well-versed in that software as, you know, as anybody. They're the people that need to, if you're going to streamline the permitting process, it's the people that are administrating, and not the technical people, not the people in IT. It's the people who are administrating, who are taking in permits and who are pushing things along. If they're knowledgeable, that's going to grease the wheels that much more to keep that process moving, right? Because it's not going to stop. It's not, they're not going to say, oh, I didn't get this, I didn't get that, I can't find it. And that's something I've talked about before, is if you're asking somebody to submit something and submit certain documents, you should know what the process is for those documents coming in and for those documents to move along to somebody else, right? So you should be able to file a permit yourself to see, you know, what the process is. And it's simple. It seems oversimplified, but I've been doing this for, you know, I'm not an expert at all, but I've been doing this for 20 years. And actually with OpenGov and Viewpoint, I brought that into Walpole. I vetted it and ended up bringing in a different program into Brookline. But I also assisted Newton a few years back in bringing in Viewpoint, OpenGov. And I was involved when Hansen came in. That seems like it was, God, I don't even know how long ago that was, when we tested Hansen, and then they got on the plane and they took off. But yeah, it's a matter of knowing the system. And the interesting thing is, you know, there are departments that I won't name that are on the portal in Boston, yeah. But you still have to file paper plans, and you still have to file paper specs and documents. So that's confusing as well. But so that's my two cents on my administrative background with the permitting systems.
Okay. So we'll move on from ISD, but the two takeaways, if Tanya and Dion are still on, I think that were important, which was Regina's point about it's not just an ISD issue when it comes to permitting. It's all the departments. It's a, you know, the weakest link, what's it, the weakest link in the chain is as strong as the system is. So you have to look at it holistically. And then I think the other good point is the one that Mike just made, which is if you're a building official or you're at an admin, a clerk at counter one or at counter two, and you've never filed for a permit yourself and have no idea what the application process is like, how can you help a customer that comes in if you've never done it? It'd be like if it was my job to teach somebody how to shoot a basketball and I've never shot a basketball myself. That's what we're having in some cases. So I think those are the two big takeaways. Now, this one is a little tied in. I think it's just a little funnier. There is a software company, let me get the name, Permit Flow. They raised $31 million in funding so they can progress with their software that is going to expedite permits. Thoughts?
Yeah. I don't know if you want to start, Reggie.
That face says it all, Mike. Yep.
Yeah.
You go.
No, I mean, so, you know, keeping AI out of this, there are just so many factors, so many variables that go into permitting, right? And Reggie, you know this, just as you said, from different towns, you made reference to, you know, the process is different, the systems are different. And then local, you know, local zoning requirements, there's so much different. And the human factor, you will never get rid of. The personality factor, you're never going to be able to get rid of as far as permitting systems go. There is no, you know, Joe, you know that we've been in touch with a couple companies that reached out, and they have similar software that they're proposing, and they kind of wanted to go through the process of permitting and what's the biggest hang-ups. And they were asking me what towns look at when they're procuring, you know, permit software. The human factor, that's the time, right? You're not going to cut to, it doesn't matter what, it may be able to organize the paperwork for you better. It may be able to pull in some of the requirements from a particular portal, but There is no company that can guarantee to cut what did it say? It's going to cut days off of the permitting?
15 to 30 days off of your permit.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I guess if they can guarantee that, your money back guarantee, right? Then let it fly. But I just think there's too many factors to have that actually work the way that they think it's going to work.
Yeah, Regina, I want to hand this to you because you would have the best sense of this. But just the idea that, first of all, someone invested $31 million into a software that is going to expedite permitting. They clearly have no idea what the permitting process is like. And you were a little more diplomatic, Mike, about this, but like, that's laughable. They just flush money down the toilet. Anybody that thinks that a software is going to, excuse my language, I won't use it because maybe I don't want to get dinged on Instagram, but you know, they're out of their minds. There's, you know, it's just not happening.
Yeah. Now there's plan review software that's being pitched out there. There's system plans examiners to go through and catch code and, you know, that will actually read the plans and then, you know, do takeoffs. I don't see it happening. Reggie, what do you think?
Sometimes things just aren't that black and white either. Like sometimes you need to talk it through. At least I feel. I don't think that, maybe for a roof permit or something pretty basic, it could work. But if you get into anything pretty complicated, I don't see how it's possible. There's too many factors that play into it. And, you know, maybe like in terms of like a short form, like Boston has, maybe it could work a software like this. Right. But even still, it's just a lot of factors that go into the process.
Yeah. You're saying factors and nuances, frankly, right? Like, how is the software going to capture all the little like bits and pieces that this town wants this form, that town wants that form, this, like, there's so much nuance and so many variables in there, like that is ever going to get captured into a software? If anything, I think the software will end up making things take longer.
Right.
Because it's going to probably give you some boilerplate stuff that you need in everywhere, but then it's going to miss stuff and then you end up having to refile. And like, I think
it's not one size fits all. Right. Like there's really just not one size fits all for permitting. Yeah. And I saw that I was just kind of glancing through it last night, reading up a little bit, but are they trying to do inspections also through this? That
I did see a little bit of that. And then Mike was talking about a different software. There's a couple of companies trying to basically be able to do code reviews on drawings. Again, it runs into, especially in a place like Massachusetts, to try and capture all the nooks and crannies in everybody's different cities and towns and what they want and how they change. And, you know, you got to talk to this person on Tuesday and not on Wednesday, and good fucking luck, right? So,
long story short, you slipped. You couldn't help yourself.
No, I couldn't. They just flushed $31 fucking million dollars down the toilet. Good luck,
Joe. We want this show to continue.
Yes.
So just thrown off. You know, the only thing I can see being beneficial in cutting down, but now you're going to get into union issues, and is one outfit or one group that I was talking to. They're out of MIT. We're proposing the code review software that could be utilized by, you know, a municipality, and it would either be on the outside and people run their project through this system, or it would be on the inside where the plans examiner or the inspector would run it through the system. But it would do just that. It would do the code review, and it would be, you know, guaranteed to catch whatever the building code, which is a little more uniform obviously than
zoning code.
The zoning code and different nuances in the municipalities. And that could cut some time. But now you're getting into union issues, and, you know, the computer's taking our job. That's our responsibility. And so that in itself is a hang up on it.
Yeah. Just the bureaucracy, the politics, the union issues, the local ordinances, all too much to capture in a universal software. Never going to happen.
Right.
was in a meeting last week, Construction Fire Safety Partnership, and NFPA came in and chatted with us about Boston's plan to roll out a renewal on the hot work certification. So this isn't 100% ready for press yet, but I just thought people would be interested. They were there to start telling people. So Boston wants a renewal. So now your hot works has to be renewed. Your hot works has to be, the certification has to be within the last 3 years, is the best way to say that. So if your card is within the last 3 years, your hot work certification is good to go. Now we're talking Boston only. The state does not need a renewal. Boston only needs a renewal. It's every 3 years, and that's for people issuing a hot work permit, performing the work, or acting as the fire watch. Anyone within the hot work process needs to have that certification in Boston, and it needs to be within the last 3 years. In August, they're going to start like kind of do a soft rollout with the education. So August 2024. And I believe they're going to start with the unions to make sure that the trades are getting they're up to date and all the apprentices are coming in with the new information. And then starting January 1st, 2025, it's going to go into effect. A little kudos to the Fire Marshal Ellis in Boston, not the state fire marshal, the Boston fire marshal. You know, NFPA came in, rolled it out, talked about it being 2 years. After the group met, a lot of people gave the fire marshal feedback, and there was some back and forth going on, and they readjusted and said, you know what, 3 years is probably more reasonable. So it was amazing to see someone in government, you know, hear the feedback and make a judgment and not just have it be, oh, that's what we decided, so we decided. So it was very refreshing to see industry, whether it was trade associations, contractors, code consultants, other AHJs, all talking about this and kind of coming to an agreement with what might be the right number. So to recap, if you're in Boston, your hot works need to be recertified, your hot work certification needs to be recertified every 3 years, your card needs to be within the last 3 years, Boston only, and it goes into full effect right now. It's not 100% locked down, but right now they're estimating January 1st that goes into effect. Any thoughts on the hot work stuff?
No.
That was more just an info dump for people. The parade.
Yes.
Parade. Got a new banner?
Yeah.
This is meant for the parade. We are going to have Youth Build, Wentworth, which are pretty well known in the industry right now. The goal is to get their names out there. So maybe people that are watching the parade or watching NECN, and there's somebody young, the head of the parade is here.
Anybody, let me get the plug out before, please. While he's here, anybody that wants to donate, anybody that wants their logo in the parade, reach out to the parade committee. Brian, similar last name, Yanovich, is on the parade committee. You can find them on, you know, Google the South Boston St. Patrick's Day Parade. And, you know, if you want to support the parade, please do. It's a grassroots organization that's been running this thing for the past couple of years. They've done a great job. So,
yeah. Who benefits from the parade?
Brian, you want to chime in? So there's a bunch of different agencies. We'll wait for Brian if he's still there to, he's probably on the job site already.
Yes.
Good local 223 laborer.
Yep. We were just talking about that. He better get his hot work certification.
Yeah.
Updated.
Yeah.
But I'm pretty sure there's, what is it? The, some veterans groups.
Allied War veterans.
Yes. And then Mike, stop rocking in your chair.
Sorry. I just moved. I was under control.
The coffee's kicking in for Mike.
Yeah.
Brian's on it. Oh, Allied War Veterans. There you go, yeah. Brian. Dive in. Yep, so we're going to be out there. We're going to try and promote people to get into the construction industry. You know, Youth Build is a great way for young people to get into our industry, probably for both trades, but they've now added the designery. So if you're a young person and you want to get into the architecture or engineering side of things, Youth Build's a great way to do that. Wentworth is a way so many people of us have come into this business, whether it's through a certificate program or a bachelor's degree or now master's degree. Great program. They're going to be there. We're going to try and get the word about them. And then Quincy College has recently started adding some classes that we're helping them with. And for people that are kind of looking to what I'll say is level up, you know, maybe they have one position and they want to become a foreman, or they want to become a super and they need a license, or, you know, a great craftspeople but might not know how to read drawings. So we'll have plan reading classes and safety classes. So Quincy College is trying to help people too. So the job of that day is to get the word about out about these groups that are trying to encourage people to come into our industry. So please, if you see us sharing about it or you see people sharing about the parade, put the word out. It does a lot of good. It's a great organization that's been around for a long, long time, and love to keep the tradition going.
Yeah. And if you're out there, make sure you give us a shout while you're out there. We're going to have some music on the float. We're flying a friend in from Galway, Ireland. Richie Prendergast is going to be playing on the float. He's a busker on the streets and in the pubs of Galway. We have him on the float with us, so that should be good. But, you know, give us a shout and let us know you're there if you're on the parade route.
Yeah, I think we'll do a little live podcast also with folks that are on the float with us. My little guy and his friends are all fired up to throw gold coins and just generally have a party. So, and we also have some nice new sweatshirts, which should be fun. So that's the parade, March 17th. How are we doing on time? We got 5 minutes. All right, let's hit this last one and then we'll call it a wrap. We got a bunch more, but actually a couple things I want to hit. Let me do first kind of one that's more of, thank you, Brian. Thanks for doing the, Brian, thanked us for being part of the day. We're going to help with some handrails too.
We would designated the safety organization for the St. Patrick's Day parade.
Yeah, so
I'm glad that's in the morning thing and not in the afternoon.
Yeah. But Brian, thank you for donating your time and helping this keep going. It takes probably a lot of volunteer elbow grease to make this thing happen. So thank you. Tony Caputo, who has been the chair of the BFPR, which is basically the equivalent of kind of like the BBRS, but for the fire services side. He's been on the board for 24 years. He's been the chair for the last 9 years. He's stepping down. You might know Tony from the fire exposure analysis podcast that we did. Tony's a great engineer. It's a shame to see him go. Hopefully he's going to hang around the board a little longer and just maybe just not his chair. And then Chief Larry Fisher, who's from Merrimack, he is now going to take over as the board chair. Great news. Congratulations to Larry. People in the business might know his son, Corey Fisher, from Code Red. So that's a nice little tie. Corey's a great engineer and also a pretty practical person. Really enjoy working with Corey. He teaches for us sometimes. And I think Corey's to call firefighter as well, so he's good at looking things from the fire services side, from the engineering side, and congratulations to your dad is now chair of the BFPR. So that's a little quick note. And last one, mandatory home inspections in Massachusetts. This one is from Contrarian Boston. Oh, another plug. So this is a Substack, Vertical Prop Tech. That's where I see construction tech and property tech investments. So there's some recent funding to high-rise procurement software, the permitting software we just talked about. It's a good place. So Vertical Prop Tech on Substack, great place if you want to learn about construction technology, where the money's going, and property, so real estate technology, where the money's going. So Vertical Prop Tech, And then Contrarian Boston, which we talk a lot about here, they're the one that broke the story on if you are in Massachusetts, the Home Inspectors Association are trying to pass legislation that says if you are buying a home, you have to have a home inspection. You cannot waive the home inspection.
Why? What's their? I mean, I know why on their end, just like code, right? It's industry based, and for instance, when the energy codes are being pushed, the biggest, supporter of better energy codes, Dow Chemical. Like, why was Dow Chemical at the hearings for energy code? Well, because Dow Chemical has a huge stake. Yes, sprayed insulation, right? So I know why, but what is their reasoning behind how this is beneficial or how this benefits the consumer? Are they saying it's consumer protection?
At its core, yes. And what they're saying is that with the run-up in prices, that and it's such a tight market to buy homes that people are being forced to buy homes and waive the inspection. So we're not, if I want to sell my house, I can say, I'm going to sell it for this much money. You have to give me a bid by this date, and you have to waive the home inspection.
So with that, is there a caveat that there can be no contingency or no, because what most people are doing now, because homes are being sold and it's going to bid, or, they're getting into a bidding situation, is most conditions by the seller is that this is the price regardless of inspection, right? So they're putting that in. So is there going to be some sort of legislation that says you can't use that as a selling tactic?
No, I guess they were just saying that you would be required to have that home inspection. And you could, I guess they could put the contingency in there that you can't adjust the price. And I also don't know what it means if you want to try and sell a house as is.
Yeah.
Right.
Like, how do you do that?
Right.
But
so I'd be curious. All right. And I know you asked me last night about something that I had posted about numbers. I'd be curious, in the last 10 years, numbers on home inspections, right? How many home inspections have been done and how many home inspections have not been done on properties that have sold? And is the nexus here that there's been a drop? And I'm not saying anything. Home inspections are beneficial to a lot of people, to first time home buyers and people who just don't know. But I'd be interested to see what the rate of home inspection is. I'm going to tell you, or I'm going to assume that more than likely the number of home inspections has dropped over the past 3, 4, 5 years.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if I'm going to buy a home right now, that's what I'm doing. Where's your leverage, right? My leverage, it might be that you have cash in the bank. It might be that you have awesome credit. It might be that you can close quickly. Another really good piece of leverage is I'll waive the home inspection. I haven't done a home inspection yet. I waive it every time. That helps me get the houses, right? So,
right.
Or the houses that I've owned. But they're saying, the market is so tight that there's pressure on people to waive the inspection, and then they're buying homes that have all these problems. Well, buyer beware. If you're choosing not to do the home inspection and it's an expensive home and you have to do it, then maybe that's not the home for you. But the fact that I should be forced to do a home inspection, I don't need to. If I think I need a home inspection, I'll get a home inspection. But the idea that they're going to try and legislate this, I don't know. I don't like it. I often, every time I see these where it's an industry group that benefits, and we see it over and over again. I don't want to get into pissing people off, but there's been a couple construction-related pieces of legislation that have come out that were really about just trying to get market share. I think it's kind of a gross way to go about it.
Right.
But that's the deal. They're pushing for mandatory home inspections, and we will see how that happens. All right, 7:02. Do you guys have anything else you want to talk about before I wrap it?
No.
I think I'm...
What'd you think about the first one?
I'm happy I was on time and not late.
I was late purposely, Regina, just to make sure that you were on time. Even if you were late, you were on time, and I was late.
Nice. All right, well, I see a couple of people said it's a great first show. That's awesome. Thank you, Jill. Thanks for joining us. Well done. All right, let us know. Would you like to see more of these? Would you like to see them on a regular basis? This was our test run. And that goes to the people that are listening to the re-record on the podcast right now. Do you like this format? Would you like to listen to this more often, first thing in the morning? So, Mike, Regina, thank you. Everybody that listened, everybody that hung on, appreciate it. Everybody with the comments, Big Wheels, Brian, Justine, thanks for listening, and we will see everybody soon.
Thanks,
Joe. Right. Thanks, Joe. See you, Rich.
Bye, guys. Bye.